I bet you have a million questions about your puppy or your new dog. That's what we're talking about today. Welcome back to the McCann Dogs Podcast. Hey, Swanee.
Shannon, yes?
What is blue and yellow and red inside?
Blue and yellow and red inside? Is it our question box?
It is!
The question toolbox!
The dog's question toolbox.
I've never noticed it's red inside.
Red and yellow and red, R-E-A-D,
oh,
inside.
No, that's quite the joke.
Yeah, there's some red on the...
Right.
No, I'm funny.
Actually,
I should be a comedian.
I have something I should tell you.
Okay.
Going along with comedians.
Okay.
Last week, one of my friends called me,
mm-hmm.
and she said her dog had, her kids had left the Scrabble game open.
Oh, dear.
And the dog had gotten into the Scrabble tiles and had eaten all the Scrabble tiles.
Oh, no.
So it was pretty serious. So they took the dog to the vet. The dog is still there, but there's been no word yet.
I was so concerned for this poor dog. You had me.
It was a joke.
Hook,
it was a joke.
Line and sinker.
I don't have any friends.
No. 20 doesn't play Scrabble. All right.
I know it's good. There's no word yet. I couldn't say it with a straight
face.
That's
so funny. Yes. You did well, actually. You had
Thank
me
you.
Sucked right into
that. I know,
that.
I could tell.
I was like, already formulating. Ooh, I was ooh. Like, oh, I wonder if when they were playing, they had food on their hands, and then
right,
the Scrabble
yeah.
tiles smelled really good, so the dog was interested in them suddenly. Like, sometimes dogs show interest out of the blue.
Yes,
so.
Yeah. Yep.
That wasn't even a question mm-hmm. that we had in our box, but
nope.
Good job on the joke. Alrighty. So today's episode, we are answering random questions, which is one of my favorite things to do because we never really know what we're going to talk about.
No, and we have no idea what's in here.
Yeah.
No idea.
Oh, look at the red questions. So our producers put a bunch of questions in the box for us, and then we answer them. So we're going to get right to that. I'm going to pick my first question. We'll see if I can read it without having my glasses on, but I do have my glasses right beside me in case I need it. So thank you to anyone who sends us in questions. Mm. We're always happy to have questions to answer and talk about. My first question here is, we have two puppies. Is there a couple of hints on how to manage the two together? So if you decide to get two puppies, mm-hmm. know that you are taking on two separate dogs to train.
Right.
A lot of the times I think people assume that if they bring home two puppies, those two puppies are going to raise each other and take the edge off each other and exercise each other and all of this, which isn't untrue. However, as humans, of course, we fail to see the downside sometimes. And there's
yes.
a really big downside. There's a bunch of really big downsides to having litter mates and raising them like that. You know, bringing them together and just letting them coexist forever and ever until you run into a problem with that. So a lot of the times with litter mates especially,
mm-hmm.
those dogs, as they're growing up together, they're going to be competing for the same resources.
Right.
They're going to be competing for the same things. And that sometimes will cause frustration between the two of them. And that can turn into fights. You know, there's all sorts of reasons that there's a thing called litter mate syndrome, which absolutely exists. Mm-hmm. And it's not that you can't successfully raise two dogs together.
No, nope, we one of our students has done a great job.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
With raising her two Goldens.
Absolutely. We have lots of students, actually, that will get dogs that are fairly close in age together. And then we educate them and we help them understand that they need to raise those dogs as individuals.
Right, yes.
So think about it as doing twice the work. But mm-hmm. of course, if you're up for it, that's
right.
great.
Yes, and treating the two dogs as individuals
yes.
as well. So they're not one little dog, they're two dogs.
Exactly.
And so one pup's in the crate while you're out working with the other puppy, walking the other puppy, training the other puppy.
Absolutely.
Then that puppy goes in the crate and the other puppy comes out.
Yes.
Yes.
So if you know you're the person who goes in and trains one puppy and then they're done, you probably don't want to get a second mm-hmm. dog. So it's going to make your life a lot more busy than the real benefits that come out of it.
Right. Think of it as having twins. You know, suddenly you have twin babies in the house and each twin baby needs their diaper changed separately.
Yeah.
They need their food separately. They need baths separately. You'll be doing the same things with your puppies all separately.
Exactly. So my goal when I'm raising a puppy is to raise a confident individual puppy. I want that puppy to be able to take on the world solo, take on the world when I have my other dogs around. Like, I want that puppy to exist without thinking they need to cling on to another being to mm-hmm. exist. And a lot of the times the short-sightedness of raising two dogs together as if they were sort of one unit is the fact that once something happens with one of those dogs, and it might even just be that they need to go and stay at the vet's overnight, mm-hmm. the other dog is generally lost without them. And that is especially true of the dog that has the softer temperament between the two. They usually will latch on and really take a lot of identity with that other dog. So then, of course, when they're individual, they end up being insecure about that. And that can be a really disastrous situation. So we want to make sure that even if you do have two puppies, you know, put in the work, put in the time, and there will be a time where they'll be able to come together and live together harmoniously. But I would wait until I had really good verbal control on each before I graduated to that step. What about you?
Right. Same thing. And I'd also consider too, it's double the expense.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yes.
And what? This is something that I've been talking about a lot lately mm-hmm. because the expense of vet care has changed drastically recently.
It has. And I know like everything has increased. So the vets yes, are paying more for all their things. So now they have to put up their fees. So
absolutely.
It's, you know, a completely understood, but.
Yeah. Well, I mean, recently I had about Ned had a bout of diarrhea. I had a bout of diarrhea with Ned. That's what I was going to say, but I'll keep my own bathroom habits myself. But I went to the vet and their debit machines were down. So I was trying to scrounge cash, and sometimes I have enough cash and sometimes I don't. So I had scrounged about $140 in cash, and based on my most recent experience with a dog going into the vet for a simple case of diarrhea, I was expecting it to be less than $150, and I was floored when the bill was well over $300. Mm-hmm. So all of the changes in vet care lately, I mean, understandably so, everything's more expensive.
Right.
Gas is more expensive. Food is more expensive. So, of course, vet care is going to be more expensive
and
as well, but I was blown away. So double that cost, right, is a lot.
Right. And just other general things, too. You're going to need two crates.
Yes.
You're going to need, you know, two feeding bowls. You're going to need two leashes, two harnesses.
Yeah.
You know, all those things are
twice
doubled.
The amount of food.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And food, dog food, quality dog food is very expensive, too.
It is. Absolutely.
Also, if you go away on vacation and board your dog, now you're boarding two dogs, and that's double the expense.
Yeah.
And so think of the expense of you know, you're getting everything at once.
Yeah.
You know, getting your heartworm tests, getting tick prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All of these things. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. It's just this never-ending list, it seems, eh?
What is the closest you've ever had in age to dogs?
So usually I have them about 2 or 3 years apart. Mm-hmm. I would say, never closer than 3 years.
Right.
And usually it's a little bit longer, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just recently I was waiting for Reggie to make his exit from the world, which he did in the summer of, 2023? He did it in the summer. Compassionate euthanasia at 15 years old, but I didn't want to bring a puppy in when I had a 14, 15 year old dog, mm-hmm. just because not because I wouldn't, you know, set things up and make sure that the puppy wasn't harassing the older dog and manage things really well. But I didn't want to disrupt his life. So
right,
I've had a bit of a bigger, my new puppy is coming home in May, and Ned is actually 7. I know, I'm so excited about that.
I'm excited too.
It's
I get
so
to play with a puppy and then send it home with someone else.
Isn't that the best thing?
That's the best, yeah.
I'll be like, Swanee, it's 3 a.m. Do you want to come and let my puppy out for a pee, please?
I'll be right there.
So yeah, I think right now I have a longer duration between ages than I would have normally, but usually 3 or 4 years or so. Mm-hmm. How about you?
I think the closest I've had is 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah, 2 years.
Okay. Was that the
That was my Saber, my second Malinois, and Gavin, my second Corgi.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes. Yeah. And then I've had like big, huge breaks too, where I haven't, you know, had any.
Right.
Like I think between Gavin and my Saluki, there was many, 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 many years.
Okay.
Yes. And even now what you're saying too, like Honda's 14 and a half, and right now he's my only dog. I could get a puppy right now, but same thing. It's like, you know what? He's a little old man and he deserves right now 100% of my attention. And, you know, I know he's not going to be here for a whole lot longer. So I'm making it as special as I can.
Oh, man. Yeah. Hopefully he's got a lot of time left, but reality is unfortunate.
Right. Yes. Yes.
But yeah, I mean, if we're so lucky to have 14 and 15 year old dogs, that's amazing.
Right.
Like,
yes.
Like my, Quincy, my Rottweiler, was sadly was gone at 10 years old. I mean, that's traditionally life expectancy with a Rottweiler. Mm-hmm. But other than that, my youngest to go was 11 years old, which still seemed way too young. But I feel fairly blessed that all of my dogs have made it to double digits, mm-hmm. at least. Mm-hmm. I feel fairly blessed at that. I've never had to lose a young dog. I know that you've been through that.
Yes, I've lost two young dogs. I've lost a dog at 2.5 and a dog at 6. Just over 6, yes. Yeah, so it's hard, yes, to things beyond my control for absolutely. Medical reasons, yeah,
of
yes.
course. Of course. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, I think you're up next question. With the question box. Let's find something that makes us happy topic.
Okay. Oh, this is a shorty.
Good old shorty.
Is it okay not to walk your dog every day?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely it is okay not to walk your dog every day. I will admit I am a fair weather walker. So if I look out the window and say, then I'm not going outside with my dogs.
Yeah.
So instead, we'll do things indoors. Mm-hmm. So we'll do mind games. So I want my dogs to have mental exercise. It's just as important as physical exercise. So in the house, we're going to maybe train some skills. We're going to play some games indoors. We're going to teach tricks. We're going to do things that exercise that that brain. Just like on a rainy day when we have our children, you know, it's like, okay, well, let's do some puzzles or let's do some crafts or let's play a board game. We still entertain, but we don't need to give them that physical exercise.
Yeah, because they melt in the rain too.
They I know I melt in the rain. Yes. Yeah. So yes, definitely it is fine. As long as you're doing something else with the dog indoors, it is fine to not walk them every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, a lot of people have dogs that are struggling, you know, be that with reactivity, be that with aggression issues. You know, there's a lot of dogs that you might not necessarily want to take them out to walk yet. And ideally you're working on the problem as you're, you know, putting off the walks, et cetera. But the reason for the walk is to enjoy time with your dog. Mm-hmm. It's to give them some physical and mental stimulation.
Right. And yourself as well.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah. So
I go on walks and I get great gardening tips. I look at other people's gardens. Another favorite time of mine to walk is just as it's getting dark because my neighbors haven't closed their curtains yet, but they have lights on inside and I can scope out their houses. So that's one of my favorite times to walk.
Are you scoping them out for decor ideas or nefarious?
No, only decor ideas. For decor ideas, yes.
You heard it here on the McCann Dogs podcast. Swati has been scoping out your house. Oh my gosh.
Close your curtains if I live in your neighborhood because I'm scoping it out at twilight when I'm out walking Honda.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't need to walk our dogs. It's nice to be able to walk our dogs. I love walking my dogs, but if you have a dog who is for whatever reason not suitable for walking at that point, just make sure that their needs are met in other ways. Yes. So if that's, you know, playing games with them inside, doing some trick training, doing some exercise in the yard, you know, as long as you're meeting their needs, that's great. And then hopefully you can work through any of the problems that you're having without rehearsing those problems.
Right.
Because of course, one of the biggest factors that contributes to a dog being reactive is that ongoing reactivity. Mm-hmm. And that seems like such an obvious thing, but it's the whole practice makes perfect thing. It works for things we like and it works for things that we don't. So if your dog is rehearsing and practicing being reactive out on the street with other dogs or other people, and they're continuing to do that, even as you're trying to train through it, you're actually making your job that much harder. So you really want to stop the rehearsal, deal with the issue, and then slowly start to bring those stimulus back in so that you can help the dog understand how to act appropriately in that scenario. So for whatever reason, you may or may not want to walk your dog, and that is A-okay.
Right.
You're meeting their needs.
Yes, that was a great question.
Yeah. All right. Going in for another one.
Oh, it's a medium.
It's a medium, not a shorty. One of our instructors has a dog named Shorty.
Yes.
Okay. What do I do if my Aussie doesn't care about treats while on a walk? Huh. Well, if they're tasty, you could eat them yourself.
That's true. Always bring treats that you can eat.
Yeah, there you go. I like M&Ms. I like.
No chocolate for dogs.
It's true.
Yes.
Well, these are my treats.
Right, yes. Okay, yes. Yes.
Walks, so. Yes. Absolutely. Very, very important point.
Yes.
No chocolate is not good for dogs. So if your dog is not interested in treats on walks, I would ask a couple of questions. Mm-hmm. One, has the dog had enough training to really be able to handle that environment? So if we have a young puppy, for example, and they're new to our world, and we go outside and we're walking down a busy street, and they don't have the skills yet, and they don't have the understanding yet, chances are they're going to be overstimulated out of their mind.
Yes.
And in that overstimulation, a lot of the times, the food won't be an important thing. So right. I'm going
to
have a
It's like when you go to a fun picnic with your kids, and you're putting out all the picnic food, but there's so many other fun things for your kids to do. Whoa. They all run off and they ignore your picnic.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you're left all by yourself
right.
with and nothing but potato salad.
Right, yeah. And then by the time you pack it up and put it away, the kids are like, we're hungry.
Yeah, exactly. Of course. Yeah, so, I mean, realistically, this is a situation where the dog is probably overfaced. The dog is probably overstimulated. Maybe the dog's not overly hungry in that scenario. So, well, none of these things are things that are not unnatural to happen in life. Mm-hmm. What we want to do is we want to try to be smarter than that about our training. We want to set ourselves up for better success. So if my dog is not interested in treats on walks and I'm trying to use treats to help them learn skills, then that's not going to come together well. So I'm going to take the walk out of the scenario. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to my house. I'm going to start in my kitchen where there's nothing going on, you know, nothing exciting to distract.
Nothing ever happens in Shannon's kitchen. Ever. Not even cooking.
No, no cooking. What's that thing with the burners in the kitchen?
Do you have one of those?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Well, you open it up and it's storage.
I use it as storage. A desk. Yeah, I use it as a desk. Actually, I use it to warm my kitchen nicely. Actually, there's not much better than standing in front of a warm stove when it's chilly.
Yeah, and you're the kitchen cool. furnace.
Yeah,
yes.
Open the stove, and then you get that rush of warm air.
Yes,
and it's just
yes.
Like, oh, so comfortable. So comfortable. Anyways, we digress. So I'm going to go to my kitchen where there's nothing exciting going on at all. And I'm going to start the foundation for my walking skills there because that's where I'm going to have my dog's attention. Think about this as the young child going into the classroom, right? We set them up for optimal learning. We don't try to teach them math while they're out running around on the playground doing recess. We have them sit in a quiet room. We set them up for optimal learning. All the other kids are quietly working as well. Mm-hmm. And then we have their attention and we help them learn.
Right.
So at some point, that child needs to leave the classroom and go out in the real world. But that's not where they're doing the learning out right. in the real world. They're doing the learning in the classroom. And then we slowly transition to mm-hmm. applying it in the real world.
Yes.
So the other thing that I would say about this problem, if your dog's not interested in food on walks, if you have trained and you are expecting that your dog's going to be better at things on walks at this point, then maybe something else other than food is going to be a good reward yes. and a good motivator. Mm. So you might have something like a toy. You might have other reward systems. I have a whole bunch of reward systems with my dogs because I want to make sure that I get to the point where I don't need to carry food. I don't need to remember a toy. I'm still going to be able to reinforce my dog pleasantly for doing the thing that I've asked him to do. So I have butt scratches with Ned that I always talk about. I will throw things, whatever happens to be around. You know, if it's winter,
whatever happens to be around. Swanny's walking beside me. Shannon, my shoe.
I just needed to throw something. So I'll qualify this. I have retrievers, of course. So they love to chase anything.
Right.
If I pick up a little snowball in winter, they're so excited. If I pick up a leaf or a tiny little twig and I throw it off in the breeze, they're thrilled. Like, this is a great reward right. for them. So I have all these rewards that work, you know, outside of the traditional food system.
Right.
But toys are great as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ask yourself, are you going into the distracting spot too early in your training and your dog doesn't have enough foundation to deal with that? Or is it really just a lack of food motivation in that situation?
Right.
And I would deal with those two things a little bit differently. And
also, too, another thing, when your dogs aren't motivated by food, look at your dog's weight, too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Many people have dogs that they're overfeeding and it's just human nature. We feed and, you know, they look at us with their little eyes and we feed them more. So, you know, take a good look at your dog's weight.
We gotta make those eyes bigger by feeding them more.
It could be that your dog is truly not motivated because they're not hungry because, you know, they had a great big breakfast and then they had two or three cookies before the walk.
That's a really good point. So that's another part of setting them up for optimal learning that I would say, making sure that they are hungry. They are interested in the food at that point, and they are going to be willing to give you attention in hopes that they're going to get one of those cookies so that you can get the lessons in that you need with them. Mm-hmm. So
yes.
Love it.
Next question.
Next question. Drum roll. This is a long drum roll.
Oh yeah. I closed my eyes and then of course I couldn't find one. Okay. Here we go. Do you have suggestions on how to deal with a puppy who eats and shreds their bed?
Aww.
Well, puppies love to shred things. Mm-hmm. That's just the nature of the beast. And beds are soft. And the puppy says, hey, this is a great fuzzy thing to shred.
Yep.
So puppies eating a bed can be quite dangerous. Dogs can ingest material, whether it be, you know, our socks, our clothes, one of their toys or their bed or a towel, and it can get lodged inside them and it can block their digestive system. And that requires a trip to the veterinarian. So, you know, it's an expensive surgery and you're putting, you know, the expense is one thing, but putting your puppy through an abdominal, that's a hard word for me to say.
Abdominal
surgery is tough. And I worked in an emergency vet clinic, and I think that was one of our most common surgeries, emergency surgeries, was opening up a dog and pulling out a sock.
Foreign body extraction.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I would take away a bed or a towel from a puppy. So puppies, when I first bring them home, they don't have a soft bed in their crate. They just lie in the pan and they're fine with that.
Absolutely.
They truly are. It's human nature and it's to want to lay on a bed. But for an animal, laying on the ground is fine.
Absolutely.
The puppy has to grow and learn not to chew their bed before I'm going to add one in. So for the puppy's safety, I'm not going to put a bed in. But I might work on it as a separate training exercise, though, too. Yeah. So when I'm watching my puppy, as I always do, I might put the puppy's bed on the floor. And I'm watching them very, very closely. And then the moment I see that little mouth opening up to bite the bed, I can use a quick verbal reprimand and step in to interrupt and teach the puppy, hey, we can't do this. So as a side, I am training the puppy not to chew their bed with my supervision.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, when I can't supervise, there's no bed for the puppy's safety.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is important. And I love that you said, in the meantime, I'm going to be training what I actually want with the bed, because this is a mistake that a lot of people make. Mm-hmm. They give the dog, they give the puppy the opportunity to do the thing that they don't want the puppy to do, and then they try to backtrack from that.
Right.
So we just talked a little bit about rehearsal and practice makes perfect. So what we are essentially doing when we give the dogs an opportunity to make a poor choice, we're giving them the opportunity to practice making that poor choice. Mm-hmm. So even if my puppy is just loose with me in the living room, say, you know, I've got a young puppy, I'm managing well, I've got a baby gate set up so that the puppy can't leave the living room, and I'm keeping good supervision with that puppy. A lot of times people will ask us the question that, like, okay, well, when my puppy relaxes on the bed for a minute, they do great, but then when they're roaming around, all they want to do is carry the bed around with them or shake it or play tug with it or whatever the case may be. So in that scenario, think about staying a step ahead of your puppy, right? It's great if they're laying on it when they're enjoying it. That's lovely. That's wonderful. And ideally, that's us directing that behavior at that point, because our puppies are, you know, they're so young and their attention spans are like squirrel, like just fleas. Their attention spans are about what a flea would have. So
I don't know. True. Fleas seem pretty focused.
I was thinking that too.
Like maybe fleas really, because didn't they used to have flea circuses in the past?
And I think that they heal beautifully through an entire obedience routine with complete rapt attention.
Right. Maybe we should have pet fleas. Get rid of the dogs, we'll have pet fleas.
Yeah. I wonder if they'd be easier or harder to train. Oh my goodness. So yeah, really, really short attention span. So I want to spend that time helping my puppy, defining what that bed is for, right? So I'm active with my puppy there. I'm engaged with my puppy. I'm working with my puppy. I'm rewarding my puppy with treats for being on the bed. So my puppy's not thinking about grabbing this bed and playing with it. My puppy doesn't have downtime there, really.
Right.
My puppy is watching me and going, oh, I'm getting rewarded for being on this bed. I'm building value for the bed with my puppy. I'm building value for the activity of being calm on the bed. And then when I'm done with that, when I'm finished that training session with the bed, I'm going to say, okay, release my puppy from the bed. I'm going to take that bed and put it away.
Right. Yes.
Because I don't want my puppy roaming around the living room, even with me watching. I don't want him going over and going, ooh, now this bed is a great fun toy.
Right.
And then I start to establish the habit of playing with the bed instead of relaxing in the
right.
bed.
Right. Yes. Yes.
My puppy's going to have toys to play with, I promise. So I don't want the bed to be that.
Right. I think sometimes what happens too is say we give the dog a delicious chew on the bed.
A delicious one.
A delicious chew. Yes. And now the bed has maybe some of the goo and slime. We're all dog people. We can talk about the goo and slime that
we're
some
all
treats
and yeah, dog leave here. Behind. Let's talk about goo.
So, you know, now the bed has that, you know, like dried residue, and the dog says, oh, this licks and tastes good. And then that leads to chewing and biting too. Yeah. So, you know, I keep an eye on that as well. If the bed needs to be washed, buy washable beds.
Yeah.
Yeah. That buy is washable beds. There's, you know, I've had a few dog beds that I've paid pretty good money for, mm-hmm. and I haven't been able to wash them. And inadvertently, inevitably. Something yeah. happens, and dogs can be smelly, and yeah. the bed gets smelly. So,
oh, Ned,
washable
right now.
Beds are worth their weight in gold. So, absolutely. I have some great ones that I can zip off the covers and wash them. So,
perfect.
Yeah. So I'll wash the bed too to make sure there's not like dried residue of a treat that they just ate on it.
Yeah. Absolutely perfect. And that's another thing that will attract them. And even a dog that's never necessarily chewed a bed before mm-hmm. might be tempted into chewing if it does get stinky enough for
right,
them.
Yes.
So yeah, definitely something that is sage advice to be able to wash anything.
Oh.
Couch covers.
Right.
Bed covers. All the things, right? Especially like if you're like me and you let your dogs up on the beds and the couches, like right now, mm-hmm. it is mud central at my place, and I am so grateful that I can just pull my couch covers off, stick them in the washing machine, right? And they're nice and fresh after the fact.
Yes.
If I was just using a couch, I wouldn't be able to have my dogs on the couch right now. I would yes. not, because they just like, my God, I call it the hillbilly dog bath.
Right.
So here's what I do. We walk the property, or we play, mm-hmm. or we train, or we do whatever. Ned gets into a state where he's muddy. I have this little overflow pond that right. I use for the hillbilly dog bath. So once he's muddy, we go over to the pond. We play a little bit in that pond. I usually have him like sit, lie down in the water. So
right,
the water
yeah.
kind of like gets all the mud off uh-huh. him. And then I call him out. He's bathed. So he goes, after he goes in the
are
house,
you
he's
bathing
usually
like that
damp,
as well?
But not muddy. That is my bath ritual as well. No, I do try to shower in the house still, but I'm getting really close to needing to do the
hillbilly bath too.
Chin
yeah.
bath. Honestly, yesterday I was out for 5 minutes and I looked down at my pants and already my pants were just caked in mud.
Oh.
Just, there's so much mud right now. Anyways.
It'll be gone soon. It'll be gone soon.
It will be gone soon.
Yeah, we've had some rainy days. Yeah.
I'm really excited to get to the point where the mud is no longer muddy.
You should just pave your 12 acres.
Oh, gosh. Oh, that makes me, that almost breaks my heart to think about.
Asphalt then, asphalt it.
All right, my next question here. Oh, my dog attacks me and jumps when she knows I have food. How do I deal with this? So this is a very natural instinct for mm-hmm. dogs, right?
Actually, it's quite a common question too.
Yes, it is quite a common question that we get. And a very natural response from a dog when they see food and they haven't had training mm-hmm. in how to have emotional control surrounding food. And food, let's replace that with another dog. Let's replace that with another human if we've got a really friendly dog, you know? Mm-hmm. Anything that is a distraction, an excitement for the dog, something the dog wants that they can't necessarily have, causing frustration because of that. Any of those things with an untrained dog, you're probably going to find it causes a little bit of chaos for you because
right.
the dog doesn't necessarily know how to react. Mm-hmm. So if this dog is trained in other areas and missing training in this one specific area, I would start with rule out work with food. And we've talked about rule out work. We've got great videos on our YouTube channel about rule out work. What we want to do is create emotional control for
yes.
the dog surrounding the food. So in a nutshell, basically what I want to be able to do is have food in my hand and wave it wildly in front of my dog's nose and
right.
have him go, nope, I'm not moving until you say okay. I know I can't have it until you say okay. So obviously that's too hard to start with. But to start with, I might just hold a piece of food in my hand. And if my dog moves forward to take it, I'm just going to close my hand.
Right.
And then when he moves off my hand a little bit. I'm going to open my hand back up. And at which point he's going to come back and try to get that cookie off my hand. I'm going to close my hand again.
Right.
And then he's going to back off. I'm going to open my hand. He might at that point say, huh, well, moving towards the food didn't help. And it went away. So if that's the case, and he, when I open my hand, he doesn't move forward to take the food, I'm going to reward that choice. I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to deliver a piece of food to him because that's the choice that I want him to make.
Right.
I want my dog to see the food and go, nope, can't take it until you say okay.
Right.
So I'm going to practice exercises like that with food to build what we call emotional control with the dog. And as my dog gets better and better at understanding what this is about, I can build all sorts of challenge into this.
Exactly.
You know, now I can get to the point where I put the food on the floor and ask for the same same expectation. And if he goes for the food, I'm going to cover it with my hand.
Yes.
Not a big deal. I'm just taking away the opportunity for him to actually get to the food. The opportunity to get the food only happens when you show emotional control around the food.
Yes.
And when we reward that choice and keep building on it, we end up with wonderful things with our dogs.
Yes, yes. And also too, just getting a great verbal sit.
Yeah.
So training your dog to sit while there's a big distraction.
Yeah.
So my dog is, I can recognize my dog's getting excited about what's in my hand. I can just say to him, hey, sit.
Yeah.
Wait. That's a good dog. You hold on. And the dog says, okay, I can hold this. I can hold this until I can release with an okay.
Yeah.
So teaching a strong verbal sit while there's distractions about, you know, is going to help with that too. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
So yeah, there's no quick fix, but there is training fixes.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, one of the first handling things that I do with my dog is making sure that they are confident and comfortable with me placing them into a sit, which seems like a simple thing, but it truly is such a crucial thing. Again, I start in the white room with this.
Right,
I want to be able to cut my leash, bring my right hand close to the clip, use my left hand to tuck my dog's rear into place. My right hand uses a little bit of leverage upwards on the collar, and I'm going to be able to place my dog in the sit. And the reason that that is so important to practice, even though chances are most puppies learn how to sit like that. You know, most puppies, it's very natural for them to sit because they're already looking up at us.
It is. It's often the first command they learn.
Exactly. They're already looking upwards. That gravity takes over. Their butt goes down. It's more comfortable to sit and watch you. So they get a lot of reinforcement for sit. So most dogs can sit really, really easily.
Yes.
But the problem is, will they sit when you add distractions?
Yes.
Will they sit when you add a situation that says, no, I don't want to, that makes them say, no, I don't want to sit. I want to go see that dog. I want to go see that person. I want to go. So I want to make sure that my dog is well-versed in understanding that it doesn't matter. If you ignore when I say sit, when I'm out and about because you're excited, I'm going to place you in position.
Yes.
Because I'm never, ever going to say to my dog, I want you to do this thing. And then when he says, no, I'm not going to right now, I'm never, ever going to let him off the hook for that. Because if he thinks it's okay to ignore me in one situation, he's going to think it's okay to ignore me in another situation. So I need to be able to back myself up, which means I need tools to be able to do that. So if I say sit to my dog out on the street and he goes, no, I can't. There's another dog and I'm out at the end of the leash and I'm so excited. Well, I've got this tool that I can use. I'm going to cut my leash, bring my right hand close to the clip, say sit, tuck him into position. I'm going to make it happen. Chances are, what's going to happen when I place him in the sit?
He's going to sit.
He's going to sit for that moment. Do you think he might get up?
Oh, he's going to get up again. He's going to get up again. Yes.
Chances are, if he's really excited, especially in the early stages of this,
right?
If I place him in the sit and then loosen up on my leash, because that's an important piece of things, chances are he's going to get up again. And that's okay. That's all
that's part of training.
But I'm not going to let him get up. I'm going to place him back again.
Right.
If he gets up 20 times, I'm going to place him back 21. And then finally, when he goes, oh, okay, this isn't working, now I can praise him. Now I can reward him. Now I can build value for being in this position. So this approach of making sure that you have some skills to be able to work with, that's going to be gold.
Right. Yes.
So.
Yes. Okay. New question. Oh, I think it's my turn.
Is it?
My turn.
Didn't you just do the sit one?
Nope.
Or was that me?
That was you. Shannon wants all the questions.
I want all the questions.
That
one says, Shannon, can you answer this question?
This question is, my dog doesn't have a leash. The breed doesn't do well with leashes.
Oh, my. What breed?
It doesn't say what breed it is.
The leashless Basenji.
Yes. It doesn't say what... All breeds will do fine with a leash.
That's a leashless Labrador.
Right, yes. So all dogs can be taught to walk on a leash. That's, you know, like when you first bring a puppy home, you know, you put your house line on, and that's often their first introduction to have something dragging from them.
Yeah.
And then they get accustomed to it. Yeah. So if in even a dog that's never worn a leash, we get lots of dogs in our classes who are from other countries, and they might have been semi-feral dogs, you know, from the islands, or we get dogs sometimes from Saudi Arabia, and they've never worn a leash.
Right.
But the dogs do adjust with the proper steps.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, there's no breed that does not do well with a leash. All dogs are intelligent and smart and can be taught to wear a leash.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I would definitely, if you're having trouble, speak with a dog trainer, and they'll be able to walk you through the steps to slowly adjust your dog to being on leash.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if you're talking about dogs like flock guardian dogs, for example, who tend to be more off-leash dogs that are sort of just let loose on the farm and they have these instincts to stay close to home, you know, that dog certainly has that tendency towards maintaining themselves outside in the real world. But what happens when you need to take that dog to the vet?
Right.
What happens if something goes awry and you need to take that dog to a kennel? The dog needs to be leash trained.
Yes.
So even
if something with the weather, wildfires, if your house you might need to get your dog on a leash and get him out of that area.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. No problem is insurmountable with dogs.
Right.
I mean, there's always a solution to whatever the problem is, regardless of whether that solution is appealing to you or not. I mean, there's always going to be something in there that allows you to find a way of helping the dog, right? So, I mean, maybe the dog starts off just having a clip on their collar. Right.
Yeah.
So you get them used to that sensation of feeling something on their collar. Maybe there's a little light line attached to that at some point, but it definitely, it's worthwhile to break this problem down and solve it. And trying to speak in generalities about any breed not being able to do well on a leash is just, it's not a good.
No.
It's not a good way of trying to justify, and it's not a good excuse at all.
If the breeder of the dog has told you that, it could just be they're embarrassed to admit they've had trouble. So they make a generality that, it's not me, it's the breed.
Yeah.
But no, definitely we have dealt with all breeds of dogs here at McCann's. We've been around for 40 years. How many dogs do we, they think we've trained?
I don't know, two or three at least.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yes. I was having a serious moment.
Yeah. I mean, we're well over 100,000 physical dogs having gone through our programs, but I mean, we've touched millions of lives because we have 1,300,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel. We have lots of online students, lots of in-person students. Like there's so many different ways that we're able to reach out and communicate with people. So, I mean,
yes.
Yeah, the number is astronomical now, but 100,000 dogs physically have come through our programs.
Right, so we've seen many, yes.
Yeah.
And just in general, too, dogs, you know, are often shown in the confirmation ring, and those dogs are always on leash.
Yeah.
So if it's a purebred breed, chances are, in some country, wherever it's from, it's being shown.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so definitely reach out to a trainer, and they can help you with that.
You bet. Thanks for the question. Mm-hmm. All right, now it is my turn. I got this one. Oh, I do need my glasses. This one's smaller. Pause for station identification and glasses. Okay. So would you say that the line is always on the puppy when outside of the crate? When do you know it's safe to remove? Thanks. This is a fabulous question. Mm-hmm. So by the line, this person is asking about the house line. And our house line, I'm going to take these cheaters off now. The house line is meant to be, for lack of a better term, a safety break for your dog. Mm-hmm. So I am not using my house line as a leash. I'm not holding it and walking around the house with my puppy. What the house line is something that just drags from the puppy's collar.
Yes.
So with good supervision, it's going to be a nice, safe thing. You know, I wouldn't leave my puppy unattended with a line dragging on them, but I also wouldn't ever leave my puppy unattended, period, because then they're going to get into mischief.
Right.
So the house line is meant to be our means of catching our puppies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Swanee, you're fast, but you're not as fast as a 13-week-old puppy would be. You know, you can catch them up until about 11 weeks. You can catch them pretty easily, but it's not good for your leadership to have to work.
No, and puppies think it's hilarious for you to try to catch them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, if you watch two puppies playing, you will see the game that they will create for humans mm-hmm. as well of playing keep away.
Right.
And it's a blast and they love it. Mm-hmm. So they're going to keep wanting to do it. And of course, a lot of the times that ends up being a really disastrous thing. I always have this very vivid memory mm-hmm. of my first dog, Quincy. Uh-huh. So way back when I was just a little thing. No, 1999, our mm-hmm. first dog, Quincy, came home. She was a Rottweiler. She was a fabulous dog, but oh my goodness, we were out of our depth, so to speak. She was a lot. But luckily, we were signed up for classes, right. and right away, we got amazing help and amazing mm-hmm. advice at McCann Dogs. So, and of course, fate would have it that all these years later, now, here I am. So I still have this very vivid recollection of my father, my sister, and myself all chasing Quincy around the yard. Yep, before I knew better, and trying to catch this puppy who was like, and I'll tell you, I remember going, you know what? This is why we need to have that leash on that they talk about in puppy essentials
right,
class.
Right, yes, yes.
Like, why isn't she on that? I'm of course, uh-huh. the rule follower in right. the family, so. But anyways, right. so that house line is meant to be the thing you step on. So right. in that scenario, if Quincy had been wearing a house line, it would have been so easy for us to just calmly walk mm-hmm. in her direction, step on the end of the line. And then when she decided to do her little play bow keep away thing, mm-hmm. she can't go anywhere. I'm stepping right. on the line. So then she goes, oh, well, that's not really fun. Uh-huh. And then right away, we've just said, playing keep away with a human? It's not fun. It's not going to work.
No, it does. It never works. Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Even like toddlers. I know in the mall sometimes you see a little toddler running away from their dad yes. and the toddler's just in stitches laughing and giggling as his dad tries to catch him.
Yeah.
It's what your pup is too.
Yeah. All creatures like to feel powerful.
Right. Yeah.
Cackling and running away from someone chasing you makes you feel powerful. Yeah. Swanee, I'm going to run. You should chase me.
I'll get you, Shannon. That it happens to me yeah. with Atari once. I can't remember. Someone very early, like the first few days, let Atari out in the yard and went with her, of course. And then all of a sudden I hear a little voice yelling in like, I can't catch Atari. And I'm like, well, just step on her line. I didn't put it on.
Oh, no.
And so sure enough, there's our little Sheltie puppy out there. And I could see the gleam in her eyes, the smile in her face. And this little puppy was diving all over our yard, and we had a big yard with lots of little puppy holes to go into. And I remember saying, I think it was my son, like, Ty, you need to put her house line on. Yeah. Like, look what's happened now. Yes. And yes, yeah, so usually it happens to you once, and then after that, it's like, okay, house line needs to be on.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That is funny. The stories we could tell about yes. our own misguided
right.
adventures
yes.
before
yes.
we knew better, so
right.
to speak.
Yeah. Well, we knew better then, but things happen to dog trainers too. Yes.
I can at least plead ignorance. I didn't yeah. know any better at that time. No, I do remember having the conversation with my father and my sister at that point about this is why we need to have that right, line yeah. on. Like, I was furious because I was doing her training from a young age and they right. were, of course, undermining my efforts.
Oh my well, gosh. I think I told the story on the podcast maybe last year about our first Malinois pup, and we didn't have a long line on her outside, and we were late for work because we couldn't get her in the house. And how we ended up getting her in the house was we opened the screen door and put the latch on it so it was open, mm-hmm. and then we got a broom. And we kind of just, you know, used the broom to corral her and sweep her into the house.
Sweep her into the house.
And then we were late. We both worked at the same place. We drove in together. And then we got to work late saying, sorry, we couldn't get our dog in the house this morning.
We couldn't catch our dog.
Our puppy wouldn't go in the house.
Oh, my
so,
goodness.
Yeah, then after that, it was long line every time and yeah, never good. A problem. Never. I was bright and early yeah. for work. Had a coffee before I started.
That's the way to keep your job.
Right.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Yeah, the house line, honestly, I would never raise a puppy without one now. Right. Like, never. I mean, the second they come home, the first thing that happens is they get used to dragging around a house line. Mm-hmm. And I use that until, so that was another part of the question. How do I know when it's safe to wean away from it? I use it until I feel like my puppy is spectacular. They're right. listening well mm-hmm. in the house.
Yep.
I can't remember the last time I had to redirect them using that line uh-huh. or stop them using that line. At that point, I'm going to start shortening it.
Shortening it.
I
yep.
usually am too gun shy to just take the whole thing off all mm-hmm. at once and go, oh, I really hope so. So what I usually do is it might be 6 feet long. I usually get like the, just the white nylon line mm-hmm. so that it can get filthy. I can cut it up into pieces. Right. I can replace it easily if it gets peed on or anything like that. Right. Like, it's usually a very cheap piece of line. I'll buy a clip and I'll tie the line to the clip and then attach that directly to the puppy's collar. We have amazing purpose-built puppy house lines as well that we sell in our Mechanics.
And they are washable too. Yes.
They're washable and they're fabulous. Like I am quite certain actually that I'm going to pick one up for my new puppy coming home just because they're so much nicer, but I'll still have crappy ones to drag around outside and whatnot and get peed on.
Right.
But what I like to be able to do is just cut up a little bit at a time. So I'll take that 6 foot house line. I'll maybe cut off a foot.
Right.
And then it's 5 feet long and I still have the confidence that it brings me.
Yes.
Because I still want to feel like if something comes up at this point, I can still address it.
Yes.
And then I might spend, you know, a couple of weeks at that 5 foot mark. It's not a harmful thing to have this line dragging around on my puppy at all. So I'd rather have it, not need it, than the reverse of that.
Right.
Of course. And then I'll just keep going through that same process. Okay, things have been great. So I'm going to cut off another foot. I'm going to cut off another foot. Mm-hmm. Here's what usually happens. Because dogs are developing, right? Because they're not, it's not just a linear experience where
they get better and better and better.
This and then they learn this. Like there's all sorts of ups and downs. There's all sorts of development periods that they're going through. So chances are I'm going to have good behavior and then I'm going to have a little bit of not so good behavior. Yep. And then I'm going to have good behavior again and then not so good behavior because
That's normal. Life, that's right? With all with humans. It's with everyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Developmental.
It's with Shannon
things.
All the time. I'll have a few days of good behavior from her and then a few days of bad behavior from her.
Oh my goodness. And that's never going to change. Never going to change. I've rehearsed far too much bad behavior.
I need to get her long line back on her.
Get that line back on. I don't know. I think you might need handcuffs and all sorts of things now to corral me. Whew, I got lots of tricks by this point in my life.
A crate. I think I'm just going to the crate for Shannon.
Can play keep away better than anyone. Alrighty. So once I feel that confidence, then I'm going to take off the long line. And usually by that point, everything is so habitual in terms of listening that the dog's just used to that anyways.
Right.
But if I do have one of those peaks and valleys, I have no hesitation about putting it right back on.
Right.
You know
what? Or if you go away to a cottage or you go to visit your grandparents, you know what? I got my house line.
I'm
my
just
assurance.
Thinking my grandparents have been gone for a long time, so
It'll be a lonely visit. Well, it'd be you could go and visit the cemetery or a hill, and you just sit and have a conversation with them. They don't need to be there. They still their spirits there.
Yeah, I'll let my puppy chat.
Yeah, they'll want to see your puppy.
Sorry, I just my literal brain just latched onto
right,
that
yes,
funny
yes,
joke.
Yes, 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 yes.
Carry on.
Right. Yeah. No, it's back to you.
Oh, we've lost the plot.
Nod
to Instructor Robbie.
The
Instructor Robbie says lost the plot. So you were saying that you might put the long line on if you went away for a vacation.
Right. Oh, yeah. Or go to visit your grandparents.
I'm
going to bring that line because when puppies get into new situations, they say, hey, we're at Great Aunt Ida's house. I think I can go under her bed.
Yeah.
And off they go under the bed, and now who knows, you know, what they're getting into under there. So it's preventative.
Yep, absolutely. And a good one at that. Try to always think about how you can stay one step ahead of your puppies.
Yes.
Because
or adult dog.
Yes.
Yep, or adult dog too. It does. House lines can also be on adult dogs.
True.
Yep.
Yeah, and
they're
I
not
would
just
use
for puppies.
One. If I had a dog that was coming into my house that had unknown skills, they would be on a house line as
right?
well.
Right, yes.
So whether that's a dog that I'm fostering, whether that's a dog that I'm looking after for somebody else, whether that's an adult dog that I've brought into my home to be one of my dogs,
right?
Until I know that that dog is reliable on my voice, I'm always going to make sure that I have some sort of means of taking control of them. So if it's an adult dog, it might even be a leash rather than just a house line.
Right, yeah, something thicker, yes.
Something that's not going to burn you potentially too.
Right.
So, okay.
Okay,
I think we're ready
last
for the
question.
Next question. No, there's two more.
Oh. One was hiding.
One was
okay.
Hiding.
Oh, this one's upside down.
Uh-oh. Can you read it upside down or do you need to flip it?
Woopaka. Blah, blah, blah. What kind of training treats do you use for your puppy? Well, with my puppy, I like to start off with their kibble. That's generally my go-to. It's got, because I'm using a lot of treats with a young puppy, and it's got lots of nutrition in it. I know they're getting the nutrition, and I know that they're getting what they need. I also will use, on occasion, like small cut-up pieces of chicken, maybe Cheerios, prepared dog treats that I've bought at the store, but I keep them really tiny. I'm never going to give a puppy a huge piece. Yeah,
good idea.
You know, often we recommend the size of a raisin, but I'll even go half a raisin. I never reward with raisins. Raisins are toxic to dogs, but that's a good size to think of when you're training. So,
and sometimes if you have an even smaller dog, you might even want to go smaller. Than
right.
That,
yes. So. And especially dogs do a lot of their tasting, I think, by their sense of smell. Mm-hmm. So if the smellier the treat, the smaller the piece can be.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's for sure.
That's a fact.
So start with your kibble. That's kind of the best way to start off.
Small and smelly.
Yep. And then go small and smelly. I like to use a dehydrated liver. You can buy it at the pet store. And there's some companies that dice them up super, super tiny.
Yeah.
And that's great. Or even you can get dehydrated liver in cat treat sized. So go to the cat section and look for dehydrated liver or dehydrated chicken. And it's cut up very, very tiny for cats. And it's the exact same product as it is for dogs.
I never think about cat treats. Huh, yeah.
Well, just I've had some tiny breeds.
Yeah, you
So some days, you know, I don't mind chopping things, but other days it's like, I'm lazy today. I'm just going to go and get some cat treats because they're already tiny dog sized.
I'm with you.
Yeah. But I do make sure that they're identical to the dog treat.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Perfect. I tend to use my kibble as much as possible when I'm training a puppy. I don't want to overfeed them.
Right.
I want to be confident that they're not getting more calories than they need. Mm-hmm. I want to keep an eye on their weight. So I do try to use their kibble a lot because there's so much to do with puppies. There's so, so much work to get done. And I will save the high value treats, which I will use small pieces of cheese. I like dehydrated liver as well. Mm-hmm. I like to get like a hunk of meat. So maybe, you know, a piece of a chicken breast that I saved from dinner the night before or something like that. And I'll cut those up into tiny cubes that I can use for higher value treats. So I try to avoid like deli meats and things like that.
Right, yes.
I know a lot of our trainers will use chicken wieners and hot dogs. I'm not a huge fan of them. They're really high in sodium.
Right, yes.
So I personally avoid them.
Nitrates and things like that. Yeah, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. All the processed stuff. I don't eat it myself, so I don't really want to give it to my dogs. Right. But
I'll buy a beef heart. So
yeah,
I will, yes, I don't know how readily available they are anymore, but the grocery store near me always had beef hearts, and it's a huge chunk of meat, and I would boil it for 30 minutes, be prepared, it smells kind of gross, and then I would slice it up and put it in the oven just to dry it out, so maybe at 350 for, you know, 15 minutes, dry it out, dice it all up into little bite sizes, toss it in the freezer, and then I could bring it out and use it as needed, and it would last a long time, and they're not expensive to buy a beef heart. And, you know, you could put a little bit of flavoring or something on it. I know garlic's not supposed to be great for dogs, but a tiny little bit of garlic powder can go a long way and produce some smell on it. Yes. Or some bacon fat kind of with it.
Yeah, bacon fat would be a good one, as long as it's not too excessive.
But, right, yes.
Yeah. Very cool. Mm-hmm. All right.
Oh, that one, that was a slippery one. It's Shannon dropped that one.
Trying to get away from me here.
House line. Put a house line on that.
I can't read it again. I need glasses. Okay. Here we go. All right. Why are you saying hurry up? You should say go potty and hand them a treat when they're done. Dogs respond best to food and positive reinforcement, not rushing them. Okay. There's a whole bunch of tiny little questions in here that we need to address.
Yeah.
So first off, the words hurry up are just whatever words
they're
you want to pick.
Yeah, and dogs don't understand English.
Yeah.
So they don't feel hurried when we say hurry up.
You got it. Absolutely. So basically what we're doing when we create a cue word for the dog to go to the bathroom is we're trying to prompt them to go. So we actually teach this in our classes, and I think it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. What we want is to be able to go anywhere we go and do anything we need to do, and we want to take our dogs along with us.
Yes.
So sometimes that means that they're not going to be in familiar washroom territory.
Right, yes.
So I might be at an airport, for example, I might need my dog to go to the bathroom, and maybe there's only a foot wide patch of grass. Mm-hmm. So I need him to go to the bathroom on the concrete. Right. And my dog's probably not going to naturally want to go to the bathroom on the concrete, but I need him to go to the bathroom. So I can create a scenario where my dog understands what a command like hurry up means.
Right.
And hurry up then tells them that they're safe to go to the bathroom in this place.
Right,
I need you to go to the bathroom. This is okay to go to the bathroom. Have at it.
Yeah. And the last few times I've flown, Some of the airports I've been in have had doggy comfort stations indoors.
There you go.
So there's an area indoors with AstroTurf. I don't know what's under it. And you take your dog to go to the bathroom there because a lot of people fly with the dogs under their seats or service dogs. And my dogs would have never experienced something like that. So if I was flying one of them, I would need to rely on my hurry up. So they go, well, we're in an airport. There's people watching me. I have no idea. I feel like I'm on a carpet, but Christine says go, so I guess go.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not about rushing them at all. I mean, you can say daramakut, and it'll mean the same thing to a dog if you say it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know what that word was that I just said.
I don't know.
It might be some Estonian word from back in my childhood that just popped into my head because I don't speak Estonian.
It sounded like a word, though.
It did.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that up when I get home and see where I got that from. But at any rate, I can say anything I want, and the dog is not going to feel rushed or take offense. This is not the this is not the goal of saying hurry up. You know, I use duties for poops. It has nothing to do with anything. It's just the word I've chosen.
Yes. We pick hurry up because it's not embarrassing to say.
Exactly.
Give
mommy a pee-pee is probably a little bit too.
Right. Yeah.
On the nose in public.
Exactly. Like, you know, saying go potty's not embarrassing, but
if you want to say go potty, say go
potty. You can say go potty.
So, and this question, it actually says you should say good potty. So the connotation is that hurry up is negative somehow to the puppy and good potty is positive somehow to the puppy. And that's absolutely not the case. Mm-hmm. Dogs don't have language skills. We teach them associations with words that we use, and they're never going to take offense or feel like they're somehow being put upon by us saying hurry up instead of good potty.
Right.
We'll never register.
That's very much a human.
Yeah.
A human feel.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Shannon, hurry up. Hurry up. Hurry
up. I just peed on the couch. Oh, and I feel rushed. So good potty will work just as well, whatever you want to say. But remember that this is supposed to be a prompting behavior. This is not meant to be the thing that comes after.
Right.
So even if I said hurry up, if my puppy starts peeing, I can say good potty after. That's not a command. The other thing here that I really want to jump on and discuss, you should say good potty and hand them a treat when they're done.
Oh.
So here is a really good way of shooting yourself in the foot, so to speak.
Or the put.
With your potty training, because dogs are really smart, right? And if I go outside and I go potty and I get a cookie for that and I start thinking going outside means I get a cookie, as a puppy, I'm probably going to learn, and we see dogs learn this all the time and we have to help them unlearn it. Uh-huh. I'm probably going to learn to run outside, fake pee, and then run back to get my cookie, which that's what they're going to do because they're smart and they're wonderful creatures.
And they can also become very demanding. Yes. It's like, hey, where's my cookie? I get a cookie for doing this. Bark, bark, bark. I get a cookie. Yes. Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, if you are trying to ensure that your puppy's bladder is empty so that you know they've gone to the bathroom, you can bring them back inside and now they can have some freedom in the house and you're not going to have to worry about having a house training accident, you want to be very sure that they have had a good solid pee when they go outside. And having them rush that thing to get back to get the cookie or to get the cookie at the end of it is going to create problems in your house training.
Right.
So that definitely will confuse things. And then to carry on, dogs respond best to food and positive reinforcement, not rushing them. Dogs definitely respond very well to positive reinforcement and to food.
And to food, yes.
In this scenario, I would not use food, but we use lots of food in our training. And I couldn't agree more that using food and positive reinforcement is a really effective way of helping our dogs learn obedience skills to live in our world.
Yes. And we're not rushing them. Our dogs have no clue what hurry up means. They have no clue.
Yeah. Just change that word hurry up in your head to go potty and it solves the problem entirely.
You know what? You could even say, take your time. Take your time. Take your time.
There you go.
And that becomes the prompt. So it's, it's
best advice ever. Take your time. Take your time.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Or you could even say, don't potty. Don't potty. Don't potty. And they still, they'll potty.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Even though it's opposite to us, our dogs don't know English.
Yeah, and to sort of qualify this a little bit more, we don't just start prompting them with any of these words. Like, I'm not just going outside with my brand new puppy when they come home in May and going, hurry up, and expecting my dog to go, exactly. Oh, I understand what
you
that means.
You have to teach them, yeah.
Exactly. The first step in this is creating the association of the word itself. Mm-hmm. So the first step in this is as my dog is actually pottying, I'm going to be saying, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, because I'm creating an association with the behavior. Once my puppy stops going potty, I can stop saying, hurry up.
Right.
And then pretty quickly, my dog's going to go, oh, hurry up. Is that
right?
I understand, yes. That hurry up is that. So then I can start using it as a prompting behavior. Mm-hmm. So once my puppy understands, I can use it when we go to a new space and I can say, hurry up. Or if it's 3 a.m. and my puppy wants to go out, mm-hmm, for a pee, yeah, I can get him to pee right away by saying, hurry up.
Right.
And prompting the behavior at that point. So we're creating the association first, then we're going to be able to, right, use it as a,
yes,
prompt. It's not about rushing them.
And we use it when we're teaching classes. So we might only have a couple of minutes from teaching one class to running to our next class to teach. And we need our dog to hurry up and go to the bathroom. Yeah. So we zip them outside, you know, hurry up or duties or whatever word we're using. The dog understands to pee and then we can go in and get the next class started on time. Yeah.
I remember stopping at a rest stop once, like an en route, mm-hmm, in Ontario, we have en routes. Uh-huh. It was raining, uh-huh, and it was Tyler at the time, I needed Tyler to go to the bathroom and I was like, oh, it's pouring rain. I really don't want to, mm-hmm, be out here. You know, out, right, here getting soaked and then driving the rest of the way, because I'm sure we were on a longer trip and, uh-huh, we were at an en route. And there was another person that I could see that was doing the same,
right,
thing.
Yeah.
They were kind of hiding out under their hatch waiting for it to stop so they could take their dog as,
right,
well. So then there was a lull in the rain, which, mm-hmm, was great. So I was like, okay, here I go.
Yep,
I popped Tyler out of the crate, put him on leash, went over to the potty spot. The person that I was watching do the same thing did the same thing. And I said to Ty, hurry up. And he immediately went over to the first bush that was available to him,
yeah,
lifted his leg and had a good long pee. And then the rain started again. So I was like, okay, good boy, let's,
right,
go.
Yeah,
and we,
yeah,
ran back to the car and, uh-huh, off we went. Well, as I got in the car, I was like, oh, that person's still waiting for their dog to pee. So,
right,
I'm watching,
yep,
them. And they did not have a hurry up command,
oh,
or a go potty,
right,
command,
yes,
or whatever to help the dog understand what the point was in, mm-hmm, this situation. And they did get a little bit wetter than I did. So,
right,
there you go.
Right. Yes.
Anecdotal, but it's a good reason to teach the,
I like that story.
To pee on cue.
Yes.
And on that note, I'm Instructor Shannon.
Instructor Swanee.
Happy training.
The McCann Dogs Podcast is brought to you by McCann Professional Dog Trainers. We help dog owners to have a well-behaved, four-legged family member. Please give us a call at 905-659-1888. Or visit us at McCannDogs.com. Happy training!